Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Yeah, okay, we have one here. That'll give everybody a chance. Think of another one. Okay. Are you ready? Yeah. If sat chit is the witness, is it an attribute of Brahman or part of mithya? Well, the sat chit is actually not a witness, but we use it kind of heuristically. It means as a kind of a teaching methodology when you're doing the Driktrisha Viveka, because when you end up at kind of the innermost part of the body-mind sense organs that can be objectified, then the question is, and that happens to be the mind, then the question comes, well, is the mind known? Right? You say, yes, of course, I know my thoughts, I know my emotions, it is known. And so who is the knower? Then he says, well, I'm the knower, right? But the Atma, you're then making the attribute to yourself, to the Atma, of knowership, okay? And of course, if yourself is a knower, and yourself is a knower, and yourself is a knower, and we're all knowing different things, right, then there can't really be just one self, because if the one non-dual self is a knower, it should know everything, right? But that isn't true. I don't know what's going on in your mind, or I certainly don't know what's going on in Ishwara, in terms of the Ishwara Upadhi. And so we start out with this term Sakshi, the witness, only in reference to the mind. But then we have to resolve the Sakshi through teaching into this just pure awareness, to consciousness. And then to kind of understand, when you recognize that consciousness is not a knower, it is just self-evident consciousness, self-shining consciousness. That self-shining consciousness, as it comes up against any vritti, any thought modification, which is kind of the gateway into the perception of the world, that experience, we change the language a little bit to consciousness comes up against or comes in contact with the vritti and whatever the contents of the vritti is, then become known. So what's actually happening is, if you look at consciousness, self-evident means self-shining, you know, that nothing needs to come and light it up, self-evident, self-shining consciousness. That's a synonym. Okay, so you have consciousness, self-evident consciousness, and then knownness. So self-evident consciousness, that self-evident nature, is known, not being known, or knownness is a synonym for that. So, to understand then, the experience that you have in terms of all of the things that you objectify on all levels, from the mind, you know, from the buddhi to the mind, to the sense organs, to the body, to the world, your actual experiences as they become known, because of the vritti, in that vritti vyapti, the vritti pervades them, and then that vritti has that nama rupa name and form as its content. That content is experienced as known. But what gives it the experience of known is this: the knownness is just a synonym for the self-evident Atma. It is self-shining, self-evident. And the self-evident Atma, you know, is superimposed or comes up against, as though up against, because the vritti is only mithya, comes in contact with the vritti, and so the nature of consciousness, which is self-evident, you know, then is transferred, as though transferred in a sense, or reflected in the vritti. And in that case, when self-evident Atma is superimposed upon the vritti, the vritti gains the attribute of being known. But the knownness doesn't belong to the vritti or to the object, it belongs to consciousness. Consciousness is known without a knower. If I took a breath, So just understand this, say, consciousness, if the whole mithya goes into unmanifest condition, or imagine it as not being there, and all that there is there self-evident consciousness, is that self-evident consciousness known or not? Self-evident means it is known without a knower. It is its own experience. It doesn't require a mind or a mind to comment on it and to know it. It doesn't require another consciousness to come in and light it up. It's self-evident. The example we use for that is the sun. Like the sun doesn't need another sun to come in to illuminate. It is its own, it is self-evident from its own standpoint of this illustration. So it doesn't need another luminary to light it up. And so consciousness doesn't need another luminary, or doesn't need the mind to light it up. Whereas the mind, in fact, is inert. It's illumined. Right? Without the self, the mind is nothing. It is known because of the self. Right? It's not, you can't turn around and look at the self. But the thing is, the self is itself. How to say that? The self is really the self of the mind as well as everything else in the universe. You know, and so the buddhi has the ability to look inward and look outward like a mirror. It can gain namarupa in this way, and we call those idam vrittis, this. Or it can look this way and turn into its own nature. And then it gets the aham vritti. And the aham vritti, because there's self-ignorance then, the humvriti means the I thought. Because there's ignorance involved, that humvriti belongs to the buddhi. The buddhi gains the aham because of ignorance, because there's no viveka, no discrimination. So that was a start. Let me read the question again. If such it is the witness. Okay, so it's not the witness. It's only called the witness. That's what we mean by heuristic. You're using a teaching methodology, see or seen, differentiating the see or seen, and once you get to the innermost part of the upadis, the conditioning adjuncts, which is the mind, then there's no instruments left, no instruments of knowership left to illumine, be the seer of that mind. But yet the mind is known, and we, in our mind, within duality, well, if something is known, it must have a knower. Right? How could it be known if it doesn't have a knower? And so we think the same thing here. The mind is known, so I must be the knower. Because there's nothing left. There's no upadhi left, so I must be the knower. Because that's all we know, know or known. But now what has to happen is we have to realize, well, there's nothing there to be a knower. Who's performing this act of knowing? There's just only conscious me. There's only me, my own being, without any instruments. So in fact, I'm not a knower. I'm the consciousness which is illumining that mind. And so that mind, because of that, appears to be known. But actually, the knownness, this word knownness, belongs to the self-evident experience of consciousness. You understand? So the knownness, the self-evident nature of consciousness, is illumining the vritti. And so the knownness of the consciousness is superimposed upon the vritti. And so we say the vritti is known, but the knownness actually belongs to the consciousness, the known experience. So it's not an attribute. There is no witness, really. So the witness nature can't, the idea of a witness can't be an attribute of Brahman, because there is no witness. And it's also not a part of mithya. It's just that in this prakriya, this direct seer seen differentiation prakriya, when we get to the stage of having objectified everything that can possibly be objectified, in that last part, the mind itself becomes known, then in our mind we assume that the self then must be the ultimate knower. And so then we have, so that's a given. We understand that we're going to end up there. We call that the sakshi. And then we have to talk about how that's not so and why that's not so. So the only thing that is actually there is me, sat, which is chit, existence, being, which is consciousness, which is limitless. or limitless fullness, however, whatever words you want to use there. So that's not an attribute. It's not like there is existence that has some consciousness, you know, or consciousness that has some existence. It's that the two are one and the same, and we use these two words to point at one entity. Existence is consciousness, consciousness is existence. And the conscious existence by nature is infinite or non-dual. That's really the ananda. You see, so it is not an attribute, even the satchit ananda, neither one is an attribute of the other. They're all just, you know, pointing to one thing. It's not an attribute of Brahman, nor is it a part of mitya. It is the adhishtana, right? Which is mistaken to be a knower just because my mind is known. We only know within duality. If something is known, it must have a knower. Now remember, this is kind of a little bit of, I'm just restating what we were talking about in the class, actually. There is no experience even of a knower. There's only an experience of known. So the knower is just a construction. You know, useful. It's a construct. There's nothing to back it up. Except your own creativity. Creation. There's a word for that. I can't think of it right now.
Imagination.
Huh?
Imagination?
No. You know, we make certain constructs or paradigms and try to fit our experience. But this is a false construct. Because within duality, we do have a mind and sense organs and instruments of knowledge that perform the function of knowership, performing a function. Because the eyes, say the eyes, for instance, are necessary to see a form, color, a form. You need your eyes in order to create a vritti of that form that the eyes are focused on. The eyes need to be there to create a vritti, which is then known. Okay. So I, with the use of my eyes, become the knower of that object. It's language. It's language, because I'm not the object, I'm the knower of the object. But actually, from the standpoint of the Atma, the knower is known, which means the mind and the sense organs are known, their instruments, they are known, and the objects are known. So I am the self. I'm the self of the mind and sense organs, and I'm the self of the object also, as the satchit. And both are known. That's the thing. We stop this knower known. You know, I'm the knower, this body, mind, sense organs. I just let the whole thing be the knower. You know, I'm the knower. And everything external to me is the known. You say, yeah, but your body is known by you. So your body is also known. Oh, yeah, yeah. But, you know, you also know your sense organs. They're also known. They're known by your mind. You know if you're going blind, or, you know, if you've gone deaf, or if your sense organs are still working. You know that. Of course I know that. Huh? And it goes on like that. Of course I know that. Through my mind, I can be aware of that. And of course, the mind is also known, isn't it? So actually, everything is only known. It's all known. Because it's all awareness. It's all just Brahman. The whole thing. The Paramatma, which is the truth of your being, is all that is really here. But we get to experience this. That's why. So it's not real. I mean, it's has no existence, but we experience it. That is what we call mitya. It borrows its existence. It utilizes the existence of the sat. You know, and if enjoying that existence, this maya projects a universe, or your mind projects a dream, or projects a snake on a rope. You have your own little magical maya. The humans do.
Once it is clear that I am Atma Brahman, was it necessary to have clarity that I am the whole?
That you are Ishwara?
Yes. That I'm, yeah.
Okay, because when you say that, first of all, there's a total asanga and total non-attachment when you do that viveka, that drishtrisha viveka, you recognize that your being, the me, is not only is it not a knower, right? It really has no attachment whatsoever to anything that's objectified. That would, just to give an example, if I'm objectifying something in this room and that object or that person walks out, there's asanga, there's no attachment there. They can just walk out, you know, and nothing happens to me. Right? That's the subject-object relationship. It means I can watch, and even my mind, there's a subject-object relationship. I can watch it leave, one vritti come, one thought come and go, and come and go, and come and go, emotions change, and I remain exactly the same. That means there's no attachment there. There's nothing. Otherwise, if the emotion changes, I'm changing. If there's some sort of a, you know, a connection, but there is no connection at all, you know? And so, therefore, I know that I am just pure consciousness, but this body-mind-sense organs, which is me, from the standpoint of the body-mind-sense organs, it's still me. Just like the pot is the clay, this body-mind-sense organs is still me, the conscious being, in the satyam-mitya relationship. And so then here I am, even though I'm pure awareness, really, here I am. And how does this body make it through the world? This body, mind, sense organs. What is this relationship of this to the world? Because do I still have to make my way through an insentient universe? Mm. You know, what is this body? Because I am pure, infinite, non-dual consciousness. And then we have this body. And so how does this body fit into the scheme of things? What is the relation of this body to the whole universe? Is the whole universe conscious and the body is body-mind-sense organ? The whole universe is unconscious and the body-mind-sense organs is conscious? Then I have to kind of make my way through the universe. Or does this body-mind-sense organs belong to the universe? Is it part and parcel of the universe? But if the universe is unconscious or inert, then no, it's not part and parcel of the universe. It might be made out of the materials of the universe, but I'm a conscious being and the universe isn't. And so I don't get any help from anywhere. It's all inert. You know? And so in order to really relax, I have to understand that this whole universe is myself, and this body, mind, sense organs belongs to the universe like a cell in the body, like a cell in your body. This physical body, mind, sense organs is a cell in the infinite body of Ishwara, which means that I can allow this life to unfold as a cell in the body of Ishwara, and see what part it's playing in this whole infinite scheme of things. That's why Swamiji will call, which I love it, and it's fairly recent in the last few years, he's always working with language to use words that really convey what he's trying to say. He calls the whole manifestation of Maya as the manifestation of infinite knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I love that because if you think of your own mind as the manifestation of limited knowledge, knowledge is known. If it's knowledge, it's known. So you have a lot of knowledge for you. If you just look at the situation of the jiva, you have a lot of knowledge that's just right now, huge amount actually, that's just abiding there in unmanifest condition, ready to become manifest at the appropriate time, whenever that's necessary. You know? And so, like if I ask you right now to think of a rose, okay, it's necessary. You have to think of a rose. So, because I've asked you to. And so just to humor me, you're thinking of a rose. You're not even humoring me. As soon as I ask, say, rose, ask you to think of a rose comes. You can't even stop it from happening. It comes into manifestation. And then when it's not, then it goes into unmanifest condition, but it's there. Right? Mm-hmm. So the manifestation of infinite knowledge is the manifestation of this universe, and that is Ishvara. That's the universe comes into manifestation, and when it comes into manifestation, it is known. Because the manifestation of infinite knowledge is known. It's either lying there dormant in unmanifest condition, or it's in manifest condition. When it's in manifest condition, it's known. So the universe, if you look at it as a manifestation of infinite knowledge, your body, mind, sense organs is part of that manifestation. And so you are part of the infinite projection or the infinite creation, the infinite manifestation of Ishvara. You're part and parcel of that. You know, and so we call the part of Ishvara that you find yourself in, entangled in, is your prarabdha karma. Mm. The prarabdha karma is nothing but Ishvara. It's Ishvara's life. From the standpoint of this particular jiva, we call that your prarabdha karma. That stream of life, which you're included in, is your, from beginning to end, is your prarabdha karma. The karma that is manifest from birth and takes you all through the death. And when I understand that as Ishvara, then I can let this body, mind, sense organs relax into Bhagawan and then just enjoy my life and just realize, then you start to realize that actually you are actually responding to your life. If you think of it, you're born, okay? You're born into a situation. You didn't create the situation. You're born into the situation. So now you're responding. You're always responding to the situation that you find yourself in. So you're responding to Ishvara, always responding to Ishvara. And that's the karma yoga, is what we call that. There's several different ways to look at it. But if I'm just responding to Ishvara, I have that prasada buddhi. Prasada buddhi, like when you're, if you ever go to the temple and after the ritual is puja is done, then the pujari, the priest, will hand out some prasad. You know, that is kind of the result, the offerings that have been offered to the Lord become prasad and are offered back to you, basically. And so you accept that prasad as sacred, as something coming from the Lord. You know, you don't go, I don't want that prasad, I want that one. Now, you don't even think like that. You just receive whatever it is. It could be drops of water that have been offered to the Lord, or it could be, you know, some sandal paste, or it could be some flower petals. It could be a whole meal. It could be many, many different things. But you don't really care about what it is. It's that it's given to you by Bhagawan, by Ishvara. That's called that prasada buddhi. And so with that buddhi, here I am in the world, and I respond to the world as Ishvara, as responding to Ishvara. That's the Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. I have that devotion to where here is Bhagawan, and here is how I respond. Here's how do I respond to Bhagawan? And how do I receive whatever comes my way? I receive what comes my way as prasad from Bhagawan. I act in the world as an archana or arpana, as a worship to Ishvara, so that this raga dvesha is not really involved. It's not meaningful. My life isn't about fulfilling desires and all of this. It doesn't really matter to me. What matters to me is that, well, because of the mumukshu, is gaining that antakarana shuddhi and really owning, knowing Ishvara, knowing what is going on here, knowing what this is. But once I understand it, even and when I'm just learning and I more and more understand it as Ishvara, and Ishvara as a manifestation of my own self, of the Atma, which is Brahman, then this manifestation also is a manifestation of my being, not somebody else. It's not a manifestation of my mind. That's Jiva Srishti. It's a manifestation of the self, of myself. It's not somebody else's self. And so this is my creation. This is the creation of my being, you know. And this is where this particular jiva is located in that manifestation of this infinite being.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need to be able to just be satisfied with my prarabdha karma, think everything is prasad, do the best that I can, follow dharma, you know. Think of it as your, how you would treat Bhagwan. Treat others as you treat Bhagwan. That's the Ishwara Arpana Buddhi. And receive everything that comes your way as prasad. It's very Indian in a way, but it's very beautiful. You can always translate it into your own cultural language and see. And without that, you're still like a jiva. You're still limited. Non-dual self, but limited person. Limited jiva. The jiva is resolved into Ishwara. The jiva twin resolves into Ishwara, not into Brahman. So then you just enjoy what comes your way. Take all the results as prasad. Oh, right.
Yeah. Is it correct to say that it's through the jiva that forms of objects within the creation enjoy knownness or become known? Because it's through the jiva that there's a vritti that grasps the form of an object?
Not exactly, but I totally understand the question. Have you ever heard of that saying, you know, if a tree falls in a forest? You know that one?
Yes.
And nobody hears it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, think of it like this. Except, who wants to get me a drink of water? Actually, my legs are probably the best.
I'll get it.
You will? Okay. I'm really thirsty. I was thinking my legs are probably the ones that are the least asleep. Because I'm... again, I'm going to use the dream example, okay? Because that can be useful. Say you're having a dream and you're not identified with any jiva in the dream. So you're just the Ishwara of the dream because there's no individual point of identification. So you're just the self of the whole dream. And the whole dream, that manifestation of knowledge, is known to you. So far, so good?
Mm-hmm.
So say... Thanks. Thank you. So... Okay, so now say in that situation, if a tree falls, and the dream is of a beautiful forest,
mm-hmm.
but you know there's no jivas in the forest other than the trees. Trees are jivas, but, you know. and one tree, the wind blows and a tree falls over. In that dream, do you see, hear, respond to the tree falling over? Is it known or not?
Sure.
Yeah, sure, it is. It absolutely mm-hmm. is now. Okay, so now say the dream had no jivas in it, no humans or no even animals walking through, but now the dream changes and some people come onto the scene and you become identified in this dream with one jiva in the scene. Okay? So now you being identified with that particular jiva, you are not experiencing the scene as Ishwara.
Mm-hmm.
You are experiencing the scene from the standpoint of the jiva, and so you're experiencing it in a limited way through your sense organs and limited mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so now from the standpoint of the jiva, and say you're the only jiva around, but you're not close to the tree. And so the tree falls, but you didn't hear the tree fall because you weren't close enough to the tree to know that it fell.
Mm-hmm.
And neither was anybody else. Nobody was close enough to the tree to know that this tree had fallen. But Ishwara knows the tree has fallen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, that's the answer. Does that make sense?
Somewhat, but the difference is when I'm dreaming, I'm a jiva who's...
Not always.
Dreaming.
Oh, no. No, okay, this is important. When you're dreaming, unless you're a lucid dreamer, when you're dreaming, you don't know you're a jiva who is dreaming. Mm-hmm. So when we're using that illustration, mm-hmm. we have to be inside the dream. Mm-hmm. So either we're inside the dream as Ishwara, where the whole dream is known, mm-hmm. or we're inside the dream as a jiva who's walking around in the dream. Now you're jumping outside of the drishtanta, the illustration, if you say, yeah, but I'm really the jiva mm-hmm. who's dreaming. Mm-hmm. So if I do that, then the story changes. Mm-hmm. Now I have to look at that awareness, pure awareness, plus maya, with the maya, which is an incidental attribute, manifests this creation. The creation comes into manifestation. It's the manifestation that has its being in only in Brahman. That cyclical manifestation comes into manifestation and goes out from beginningless time. When that creation comes into manifestation as the manifestation of limitless knowledge, infinite knowledge, then that entire manifestation is known, just like an infinite mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if a tree falls in an infinite mind, then it is known.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if mm-hmm. there's a jiva in the infinite mind also to see the tree fall, then it is known through the eyes of the jiva as well as for the eyes of Ishwara,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
who not only sees the tree falling, but sees you watching the tree falling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You get it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, another important thing to understand there, think, well, how can Bhagawan have such a huge vision and be aware of everything that's going on in that vision? There's not somebody who's aware of everything going on in that vision. That vision takes place in the knownness of consciousness. And so the whole vision, the whole creation is known because of the self-evident nature of consciousness. And so that self-evident nature of consciousness, the creation itself, shines as known. And that's from the standpoint of the creation, it is known. Just like from mm-hmm. the standpoint of your mind,
mm-hmm.
it is known. Not because there's a knower,
mm-hmm.
but because the nature of the nature of being itself is known, is self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever happens there in terms of the elements, interaction of the elements from the standpoint of the creation, it is known because the sattva, rajas, and tamas of maya pervade the entire creation. And because sattva pervades the creation, now this is getting into a different level a little bit, but because the sattva pervades the entire creation, the entire creation is like an infinite mind. And so it is known.
Mm-hmm. I think I might have been saying something a little different, though.
Okay.
Because I understand that the tree is known by Ishvara, but the way that Ishvara would know about a tree is very different than the way I would know about a tree. I can only know about a tree through its forms, through color and smell, and through the objectification of my consciousness. Ishvara would know the tree as it is, which I can't really. It seems to me I can't really imagine. But I didn't say that the jiva knows, that the object becomes known because of the jiva, but because of the forms of the object become known because of the jiva. I might be getting unclear.
This one part I didn't get. The forms of the object.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you were talking about earlier when when the vritti looks at an object or becomes aware of an object, it somehow takes on the form of the object.
Oh, okay. That's what we call the vritti vyapti.
Mm-hmm.
Those words, that is all just explaining how there's a relationship between the mind, the sense organs, and the object. So say, for instance, I have these sense organs with me as instruments. As a jiva, I have these instruments mm-hmm. that we call sense organs. These instruments just lie dormant unless my mind is using them, right? Like, say, for instance, if your mind is having a fantasy or something, mm-hmm. sense organs are there, but they're not operational. The sense organs require the mind. If the mind is utilizing the sense organs, then a vritti vyapti, a pervasion of the object that the sense organs are directed at, will take place in the mind. So the mind, that's how knowledge takes place. Through the means of knowledge, a vritti which is can be talked about as a pervasion of that object, you know, or a mirroring of that object, or however you want to say it, the reflection of that object, takes place because the sense organs are directed at it. Unless we're looking at functions of the mind itself, not dependent upon the sense organs, like, for instance, bringing up a memory or an imagination or the rising up of an emotion or a meditative state of experience. The mind has its own capacities also. But when we're talking about knowledge, then the mind needs to be utilizing the sense organs, and through that, the various means of knowledge we have available to us. And so then that mind, with the utilization of the sense organs, will have a vritti vyapti of whatever pervasion of the mind, of the vritti, in reference to that given object. And then that given object will be known because the vritti is made of sattva, which reflects consciousness that allows the vritti to be known. If the vritti wasn't sattva, then it would just be inert also and would need something else that is sattva to pervade it so that it can reflect consciousness. Are we getting there?
I think so. I may just need to think about this more too.
Do you have another round?
Not right now, I don't think. It's good for one round.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is all very interesting.
I know. Yeah, no, it's so interesting. And everything so deeply levels and levels of interconnections. Mm. That's how thorough it is. Shocking.
Mm. All right. This issue of that the sattva-guna pervades the universe, therefore everything is known.
For the standpoint of Ishvara.
Yet everything is not conscious.
Or everything is not conscious.
Because without a subtle body, it's not conscious, it's inert.
That's right. So from the standpoint of Maya, everything is known, but everything does not enjoy knowership.
Okay. And what's the difference? What does it need to have?
A subtle body.
Okay.
And functioning sense organs.
Okay.
The mind could be, you know, the brain, there could be brain damage. The subtle body is there, but it's there without a functioning upadi. And so when that body, because they say the body is injured, or the mind, brain is injured, sense organs are injured, that subtle body is incapacitated, not really from its own standpoint, but it can't function through that. That injured, like your injured ears, right? Your ears are, the subtle ears are fine, and nothing happens to them. But when the physical body, you know, is hurt or damaged in some way, then the subtle ears can't use these physical instruments, can't enliven these physical instruments. When you take another body, as long as the physical instruments are fine, the subtle body can make use of that.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing I was interested in is the distinction between that, because sattva guna, every element has sattva guna, so therefore sattva guna pervades the entire universe, so that's what you said, that makes, from the point of view of Ishvara, that's why the whole universe reflects consciousness. And well, is known, but it doesn't reflect consciousness in the sense of being conscious if it doesn't have a subtle body.
It doesn't have nor known relationship without a subtle body.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you look in, like say in this, just in this room, okay, the knower known relationship that a jiva will have with the world depends upon having a mind and sense organs.
Okay.
Right? That comes with the subtle body.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But also that this physical upadi also has physical instruments that the subtle body can make use of, as long as these instruments are functioning. But this stool doesn't have a subtle body, as far as we know. From the same way the Shastra, it doesn't.
confused about saying that the whole Ishwara, the whole universe, is pervaded by sattva. If you say...
It's not the right language, really, but go ahead.
Maybe that's what's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, because you would say the stool doesn't have a subtle body, so is there sattva in the stool? And if not, then how can you say sattva pervades the entire universe if there's stuff around that doesn't have subtle bodies that isn't sattva?
Well, first of all, what I don't like about my own language of pervading is as though there's some, like, space pervades the whole universe,
right,
or something.
Mm-hmm. Pervading life.
But take Maya itself as being made of sattva, rajas, tamas. That is Maya.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the Maya manifests from the total perspective of Ishwara that pervades the whole creation is sattva, rajas, tamas. There's no place where the sattva isn't, the rajas isn't, the tamas is. So all three, it's like a weave of all three.
But that stool.
No, okay. No, I'll get to the stool.
The stool does have sattva. Stool does have sattva,
yes,
in it.
Yes. Well,
all elements have sattva.
Yes, right. You could say like that.
Mm-hmm.
But now when we get from the standpoint of the limited upadis within the creation, this stool has actually gone through the process, what we call the process of panchikaranam,
mm-hmm,
which means it has become this is a gross object.
Mm-hmm.
The sattva and rajas remain subtle. They're always subtle.
Okay.
And so the subtle, sattva is subtle. It doesn't go through panchikarana to have a subtle and a gross. Rajas doesn't go through panchikarana. There's no physical rajas. There's no physical sattva. Okay?
Mm.
But that doesn't mean that the sattva doesn't pervade the entire creation. In fact, from the standpoint of the creation, or from Ishwara, there's not like a physical world and a subtle world. That division takes place within the creation. You know, like if you have an imagination, there's a subtle aspect and there's a physical aspect. There's the rajas there. So, now we're talking about whether or not the upadis are just tamas, having gone through panchikarana, or that they're tamas like this body, having gone through panchikarana, but are pervaded by a subtle body, which would be comprised of sattva and rajas. So from Ishwara's standpoint, there is no identification with any given one thing. Like if you have an imagination and you're the Ishwara of the imagination, you're identified with the whole imagination. The whole imagination is like your mind. You're not experiencing the content of the imagination from within the imagination. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the jivas are experiencing, their experiences is from within the creation. And so as this physical virat, this physical world, right, some things in the physical world are themselves pervaded by a subtle body. And some are not. And so this is tamas here, from its own standpoint.
Okay.
Right? Because it doesn't have a subtle body. I think that's important to help understand this. Sattva and rajas never go through this panchikarana, this process of grossification.
Mm-hmm.
It's only the tamas, the subtle tamas. Hiranyagarbha is the first manifestation of Maya's Hiranyagarbha. It means the subtle world, the subtle being, like the infinite sukshma sharira. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But then, of this subtle Maya, sattva, rajas, and tamas, the subtle, Hiranyagarbha, of those three elements, only one of them goes through panchikarana, becoming fivefold to become the physical world, not the sattva and rajas.
Mm.
The sattva and rajas enliven as though the nama-rupa, the physical nama-rupa. And so, that's fine. The whole world is a living being. And this whole world is like a living being. And within this whole world, there are jivas, which have, what makes a jiva different than the stool, is that it's pervaded by a subtle body that we call a sukshma sharira. But that sukshma sharira is made of the same subtle material as Hiranyagarbha, but it's limited in its form. just like in this world, this whole world, physical world, is Virat. It's Ishwara, the whole world. That means that every jiva is Ishwara also. But the thing is that every jiva, if Ishwara has the Hiranyagarbha, the subtle running through the whole Ishwara, including all of you, everybody, but the jiva has as part of Hiranyagarbha, the subtle body, which goes along with that physical body. Whereas some objects are just tamas. Mm-hmm. And this happens in your imagination, it happens in your dream also. You know, some of the objects that make up Virat, the physical manifestation, now from the standpoint of the dream, right, enjoy consciousness, others don't. Because of the sattva. Of the sattva in the limited sukshma shriya, my sukshma shriya, subtle body is not yours. The atma is one, but your subtle body and your subtle body and your subtle, they're all different.
So in the grossification, it's like something that is earth is 50% earth, and then the rest of it is
an eighth of everything of the other four.
But that's only of the tamas guna. Guna.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
The tamoguna goes through panchakarana.
Only the tamoguna goes through.
Not the sattva energies. That's why we can maintain have a continual subtle body, even Hiranyagarbha and Virat, or Tejasa is the Sanskrit name for the subtle body for the jiva. You know, and Vishwa is the name for the physical body.
Okay.
That sounds kind of like the opposite of the scientific materialism that tries to start with the gross and somehow get to the subtle from that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Start with the subtle and get to the
to the gross.
That actually makes more sense to me, I have to say.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
it's
a big mistake.
Yeah.
Which one makes more sense?
Subtle to gross.
Because you start with the imagination of building a house, and then you start building the house.
Yes. Yeah, that's
right. Okay. You start with an imagination of, say, cooking a meal, and then somehow, you know, it does, the imagination
manifests.
Right.
Yeah.
When you say enjoys consciousness,
this is a Swamiji language that I've taken up.
When you say enjoys consciousness, what you're saying is that it has a sattva component, and so it's able to enjoy consciousness.
Yeah, to have consciousness,
to manifest consciousness.
Yeah, and when
we actually physically enjoy consciousness.
Yeah, but it's not enjoy like, oh, I'm really enjoying that. And that's the problem. The word when we use the word enjoy, it means I really like that. I'm really enjoying that. That's great. But here, when we're using the word enjoy, it just means it has or it manifests consciousness.
Does it mean when you say that that it has a subtle body?
Yeah.
It does.
If it enjoys consciousness,
it has a subtle body.
Yeah.
For example, you say the stool does not enjoy consciousness.
It doesn't have a subtle body.
No sattva. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
There is a sattva aspect in a sense, but it's not enjoying the sattva aspect
The sattva doesn't belong to it in terms of a subtle body that's directly related to this. The sattva is just the sattva of Ishwara.
Right. So it's a limitless sattva. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Rather than a little piece of the sattva in the form of a sukshma sharira.
Right, which is the jivas that enjoy consciousness, that's what we would say.
Yeah. Yeah, because they have sattva. Yeah. And the sattva reflects consciousness.
Yeah.
Can the subtle body enjoy that?
When the subtle body is traveling, it's still always taking a form that in relating to the level of the creation that it finds itself in, unless it goes into unmanifest condition like a deep sleep for some time. That happens also sometimes. Like if you go to sleep, you're asleep for 8 hours, or it could be asleep for a year. There's no time there in sleep, so. But then you still come out as the same sukshma sharira. And you still experience the creation. And they say you take on, in the subtler planes also, you take on the material of the plane. like this body is made of the earth, is the same order of reality as this loka, as this world is.
I have two questions, but I'm not even sure how to articulate them. It seemed that that consciousness does not know; it only lights up. And then, if our ultimate purpose of a human birth is to gain moksha, I can see how that would benefit the jiva. But how does that benefit Ishvara's plan? And then how does that take place in a jnani to obtain a maha samadhi? I don't understand. I can't even ask the question.
You're asking more than one question.
Yeah.
The maha samadhi question, I don't think I want to do tonight.
Okay.
I don't mind doing it tomorrow, though, because that's going to take me a while to do that one. And it's important also. Mm-hmm. That question, like, what's the maha samadhi for a swami? Mm-hmm. If you're enlightened, what happens to you when you die? Because you're not supposed to keep going, you don't continue reincarnating. So what happens? Right, that's what you want to know. In the maha samadhi, or is the question different?
No, it's sort of like I want to know that, all right, I am the conscious. Yes,
and
the consciousness. Yeah. So when I stop reincarnating,
right,
because of I learn to give up desires, or I'm able to somehow give up all my desires, how does that happen? How can there must be something that a jnani is able to maintain that or achieve it.
I understand. There's a lot of things we have to cover there. What you need to do is write that question in, because it's a good question. It's a complex question. Do you think you could write it a little bit?
Yeah, I'll try to clean it up.
Clean it. Well, you don't need to clean it up. I understand the question.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know that I'll remember it clearly tomorrow night.
I won't remember.
So write it down, and then I'll actually work on that question. We'll take it first. I'm too tired to do it now, because I know it'll take me half an hour, 45 minutes to really do it.
But isn't it like this recognition that I am Ishvara and there is just now Moji, but to sort of try and sort of fulfill any sort of desires, because all the desires are fulfilled?
That's right, so there's no reason to reincarnate.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
So there's just a recognition, I am Ishvara, and they're just...
Yeah, but I want to flesh it out a little bit. But that's true what you say. I want to say a little more
that's
than
the
that
short
about
answer.
It. What?
That's the short answer.
That's the short answer. I want to give a longer answer, but the short answer is correct. That's what Swamiji said once. Is that someone who has any mastery, a master in a given subject? And he was talking about Vedanta himself, actually. But you can answer any question in a paragraph or in a few sentences, or you can take 3 years to answer it or more. You know, that's the mastery, you know.
There's other questions there.
Yeah, there's other questions. So
right.
Just, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do them tomorrow because I'm tired now. My mind, that's at one point my mind just goes, what time is it? Yeah, okay. Let's say our prayer. Om Swasti Prajapya Paripalayantam Nyayena margena mahim mahishaha Go brahmane vyashubhamastu nityam Loka samasta sukino pavantu Kale varushatu parajanyaha Prithivi sasya shalini Desho yamsho varahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha
sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukkha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amitangamaya. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.